This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. On July 1st of this year, Heathcott Williams passed away. He was an English poet, actor, political activist, dramatist, and more. I have aired two of his long poems, Sacred Elephant and Whale Nation, on this program a couple of times over the last decade. And he was a writer of environmental and political matters. He brought these things to the attention of the public through his poetry. They're just wonderful, wonderful works. He is also the author of Autogeddon and Falling for a Dolphin. Whale Nation, which is my favorite, has been called the most powerful argument for the worldwide ban on whaling. And I'm going to play that again today, so you'll have a chance to hear it. Williams was also a naturalist. He actually discovered a new species of honey-producing wasps in the Amazon, and he included a book of poems about that called Forbidden Fruit. He was also a magician and a member of the Magic Circle. There is a story that you can look up on Wikipedia under Heathcott Williams that talks about an affair he had with the actor Gene Shrimpton. He was a fire eater at the time, and he says he spurned her. He broke off the relationship, so he went to her home and was going to do fire eating in her doorway and ended up setting himself on fire. She maintains that it was he that ended the relationship. Anyway, he was a wonderful poet, and I'm going to play Whale Nation again right now, and I hope you enjoy it. Here is Heathcott Williams performing Whale Nation.
From space, the planet is blue. From space, the planet is the territory, not of humans, but of the whale. Blue seas cover 7/10 of the Earth's surface and are the domain of the largest brain ever created. With a 50-million-year-old smile. Ancient, unknown mammals left the land in search of food or sanctuary and walked into the water. Their arms and hands changed into water wings. Their tails turned into boomerang-shaped tail flukes, enabling them to fly, almost weightless, through the oceans. Their hind legs disappeared, buried deep within their flanks. Free from land-based pressures, free from droughts, earthquakes, ice ages, volcanoes, famine, larger brains evolved, 10 times as old as man's. Other creatures with a larger cerebral cortex, luxuriantly folded, intricately fissured, deep down in another country, moving at a different tempo. And the whale's lips formed their distant humorous curl when we were clawed quadrupeds, insect-eating shrews, feverishly scrabbling at the bark of trees. Whales play in an amniotic paradise. Their light minds, shaped by buoyancy, unrestricted by gravity, somersaulting like angels or birds, like our own lives in a womb. Whales play for three times as long as they spend searching for food. Delicate, involved games with floating seabirds' feathers blown high into the air and logs of wood flipped from the tops of their heads, carried in their teeth for a game of tag, ranging across the entire Pacific. Play without goals. Naked, with skin like oiled silk, smooth as glass, they move at 50 miles an hour, attaining faultless streamlining by subtly changing the shape of their bodies, altering ridges of cartilage and indentations of flesh to correspond to constantly differing patterns of water, to accommodate minute oscillations with vibrant inflections of muscle and skin, so that layers of liquid glide over each other in an easy laminar flow. No drag, no turbulence, a velvet energy. Like Buddhists, they are not compulsive eaters. They can go for 8 months without food. And they do not work to eat. They play to eat. The humpback catches its food by blowing bubbles. 5-foot-wide bubbles as large as weather balloons. When they burst, they make a circle of confusing mist. The plankton, the Arctic shrimps, the krill, the sea butterflies are corralled into the middle by a bewildering ring of hissing bubble bombs. The whale then rises up to the center of a round plate of brimming water and eats. Imagine blowing soap bubbles and food drops out of the sky. After dinner, music, ethereal music that carries for miles, a siren song, leading sailors to believe, as the sounds infiltrated through the wooden hull, that their vessels were haunted by spirits of the deep. Webs of elegant cetacean music stretch around the globe. Lyrical litanies on the bioradio that draw on an oral tradition of submarine songs from a living memory bank founded 50 million years ago. Different dialects, different themes, different clusters of notes, sequences, phrases, subphrases, sung with different cadences and modulations to send different messages to different individuals. Different songs from day to day, from year to year, an indication that there are creatures other than man still evolving. Millions of mysterious sounds memorized and passed on from generation to generation, all clearly retained in the mind, uncluttered by cuneiform tablets, vellum, paper, newsprint, floppy disks. Free of all methods of transcription, which, disconnected from the body language of the informant, facilitate deceit. Alien beings. Their whole body, every bone, every membrane, every hollow, out of an enormous ear, 20 times as sensitive as man. Whale families, whale tribes, all have different songs, an acoustic picture language. Spirited pulses relayed through water at 5 times the speed sound travels through air. Varied enough to express complex emotions, cultural details, history, news, a sense of the unknown. A lone humpback. They put on a solo concert, lasting for days. Within a humpback's half-hour song, there are 100 million bites, 1 million changes of frequency, and 1 million tonal twists. An odyssey, as information-packed as Homer's, can be told in 30 minutes. 50 million-year-old sagas of continuous whale mind. Accounts of the forces of nature. The minutiae of a shared consciousness. Whale dreams. The accumulated knowledge of the past. Rumors of ancestors. The archaeocoeti, with lifespans of 200 and 300 years. Memories of loss. Memories of ideal love. Memories of meetings. For the Rorqual whales, into whose mouths 14 people could be placed with headroom, hold meetings. In certain places, set aside near the breeding lagoons. Evenly spaced, in a watery stadium, they stand vertically like megaliths, a third of their bodies above the surface, rhythmically threshing the water beneath them, breathing in unison. Cliffs of flesh, their heads quite still, talking in ultrasound, followed by long, superhuman silences, as if in a collective reverie, their brains offline, updating their programs, their brains 6 times the size of man. With a large area of silent parietal and frontal lobe, like man's, processing the past and forecasting the future. Their antique, crusty heads are festooned with regal tassels of vegetation, thick, dangling fronds and swatches of Sargasso seaweed hang off their stalked acorn barnacles. They stand eerily, like benign, long-suffering ghouls, animated standing stones, exchanging information with high resolution, detecting sounds a microsecond long. Unearthly creatures, inhabiting a medium 800 times denser than air. The whale moves in a sea of sound. Shrimps snap, plankton seethes, fish croak, gulp, drum their air bladders, and are scrutinized by echolocation, a light massage of sound touching the skin. Small, toothed whales use high frequencies, finely tuned and focused sound beams. Intense salvos of bouncing clicks, 1,000 a second, with which a hair as thin as 0.5 millimeter can be detected. Penetrating probes with which they can scan the contents of a colleague's stomach, follow the flow of their blood, take the full measure of an approaching brain. From two cerebral cavities in their melon-shaped heads, they can transmit two sonic probes, as if talking in stereo, and send them in any direction at the same time. One ahead, one behind, one above, one below. Lengthening the sound waves, shortening them, heightening them, until their acoustic switchboard receives the intelligence required. Spoken to in English, the smallest cetacean, the dolphin, will rise to the surface, alter its vocal frequencies to suit the measures of human speech, pitch its voice to the same level as that of human sounds when traveling through air, an unfamiliar medium, adjust the elastic lips of its blowhole, and then, after courteously waiting for silence, produce a vibrato imitation of human language. Words, phrases, sentences. Cybernetic attempts to mimic delphinese meet with a pained snort of disappointment, followed by a deep dive to a place of refuge, where the ratcheting, metallic ticks are less audible. The larger whales use lower frequencies, at greater depths, rumbling like generators, wavering, transoceanic throbs, with which they keep in contact with their tribe over hundreds of miles, building up accurate echo pictures of their positions in the sea, detecting giant squids 35 feet long, krakens concealed in pitch-black grottos. The blue whale is nearly 100 feet long. It weighs 170 tons. As much as 2,700 people. Its tongue is 10 feet thick, heavier than an elephant. It has 7 stomachs, arteries you could swim through, a half-ton heart, and 8 tons of blood. It has 7-gallon testicles. It eats 1 million calories a day. It has as many living cells within its body as there are people in the world. It lives for 120 years. A dark blue nucleus in the transparent plasma of the sea. A gargantuan heart at the hub of things. For the baleen whales superintend the Earth's largest biomass, plankton, from which almost all the oxygen in the world derives. They spend their lives amongst it, farming vast drifts, luminous meadows of plankton, the central atoms of life. Serious creatures, performing a serious task. Slate blue immensities, individually marbled, powerhouses, in charge of the world's breath. Or without their attentions, with their grazing pressure removed, the oxygen-producing plankton would breed uncontrollably, fractionally raise the temperature of the ocean overheat their habitat, destroy the air-conditioned equilibrium of their global crucible, and die. Their wan blue light fading, taking this atmosphere with it. Like a dying man, sucking his last breath through his teeth. Leaving the ocean basins filled with a thick, dead broth. Strangely echoing the former belief in Bahamut, a fabulous whale who provided the base upon which the whole world rested. And from its prehistoric mainframe mind, from its head, 25 feet in length, the blue whale, the largest creature ever to have lived upon this planet, now and again utters an ominous whistle of 188 decibels, louder than Concorde. Without hands, for making external tools, without depending on tons upon tons of artifacts destined as litter, the whale's sophistication has become internal. Its skills are all perceptive, social, sensual, jokey, non-manipulative. With their skillful acoustic sense outstripping their eyesight, they may have developed vision. When whales breed, they breed with ecological consideration. They breed in precise relation to the amount of food in the sea. After a season, foraging under the Arctic ice floes, through which the narwhal has made breathing holes, with its unicorn horn for the use of all species, baleen whales leave their pinnacled ice palaces and find their way south to mate. With glowing tracks behind them in the water, large as ships, the humpbacks use the rotational forces of the planet, the azimuth of the sun, the taste and temperature of the tides, the contours of the seabed, canyons, plains, vaults, the mountainous summits of the mid-Atlantic ridge, twice the width of the Andes, which stretches for 10,000 miles from Iceland to Patagonia. Guided by hydrothermal vents in the Earth's crust, the topography of coral reefs, the position of the moon and its tidal pool, navigating with a lodestone disc made of polarized magnetite, a compass in the brain, sensitive to the geomagnetic flow of force fields under phosphorescent seas, they find their way to the mating grounds. On arriving, their liquid seraglio, sealed off from the outside world by riptides, success in courtship is determined by whoever sings the most absorbing song, and whoever makes the wildest movements with their body, knifing through foam, spinning and wave-riding, spy-hopping, lob-tailing, breaching and tail-slapping, turning upside down and thwacking their bat-like flukes against the surface with sharp, echoing cracks, throwing themselves into odd, alluring shapes, sinuously whirling and flickering through the sea. They glide past each other, swishing contemplatively, testing congenial feelings, judging the suppleness of motion, judging sensation with gentle discrimination. Mutual attraction is an elaborate, thoughtful process. In Wales, the male member is erected voluntarily, unsheathed from within deep abdominal folds, erected and then collapsed and concealed again by an act of will. Unlike in man, where it has an unseasonal, disconnected life of its own. And the blue whale's penis is 9 feet long, which may require additional self-control. The two whales draw closer, fanning each other, then stroking each other with their pectoral fins. Giant pink genital lips roll back underneath the water. They join forces, embrace, mating face to face, like man, stirring their huge tail flukes. Their heads emerge slowly above the water. They clutch each other, their long flippers around each other. The accordion pleats of their grooved bellies interleave. They move their flukes backwards and forwards beneath them. Their bodies are pressed closer and closer. They drive themselves upwards, rising out of the sea, out of the shimmering green shadows below, into the exhilarating glare of the sky. The last movement, powerfully churning their flukes in unison. 50 feet below, they propel themselves upwards, gallons of water sluicing down their sides. They both jump clear, held together in midair for their massive climax. The sea moves, and any earthly thing nearby is swamped. They dive, curving their bodies. They dive a mile down, dropping their heartbeat, collapsing their lungs. Folding in their ribs along articulated joints to counteract the bends. Happily slipping through the pressure of 500 atmospheres. Quarter of a million tons of dense water at the seabed exerted on their bodies. Half an hour. An hour later, they emerge, triumphantly blowing like blast furnaces. 3,000 times the contents of the human lung is expelled in 2 seconds through their air pipes in a great sigh of steam. Plumes of warm mist, 20 feet high, jet from their blowholes. Exuberant exclamation marks punctuating the sky. Their spouting exhalations are audible for half a mile, sounding like distant thunder and looking like puffs of chimney smoke from an underwater town. They inhale. As the air enters the endless corridors of their bodies, it gives off the sound of a reverberating bell.
You're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. I'm Catherine Hastings. Let's return now to Heathcote Williams reading Whale Nation.
11 months later, the first sound a whale calf hears is singing. The mother lifts her newborn calf to the surface and then rolls onto her side, expressing her milk into its mouth, with muscles deep inside her breasts, twice as rich in protein as human milk, richer than clotted cream. The songs of their escorts filter through the water, the element of baptism, in which the whale calf is to be perennially immersed. Should anything untimely happen to it, its mother will support her calf upon her back until it disintegrates. The Inuit say, "We like the way whales think," and "the whale is good to imagine." The Kwakiutl of Alert Bay believe that the whale is a long life maker who brings prosperity. The Nootka claim that the whale allows his death to spare people from hunger, and that therefore they must be worthy of it. But other men have elected to view the whale as an essential component of an expanding economy. When an underwater shape is detected on the submarine radar, catcher boats are dispatched from the factory ship. The harpoon on the raised foredeck is manned and swiveled in the direction of the whale. As the whale comes within range, the engine's screw is slowed down and then silenced. An accurate shot lands between the shoulder blades. An inaccurate shot is followed up by two, three, or four more. At the end of the five-foot-long steel harpoon, a small serrated cup prevents ricochet. The tip strikes, followed by a time-fused charge exploding 3 seconds later, splintering and lacerating the harpoon's way into the whale's side. Next to the grenade, four barbed flanges pivot on hinges, and as the whale struggles, the strain on the rope snaps the barbs open. They fly out, ripping into the lungs and inner organs, embedding the harpoon inside the whale, anchoring her body. The whale clashes her jaws together, pants, flurries, and spurts blood raspingly through her blowhole. She thrashes her tail against the surface, strenuously heaving at the 6-inch-thick nylon line attached to accumulator springs in the catcher boat's hold, designed to buffer every move. 20 minutes pass. The whale's ribs become too heavy to move. The whale's rib muscles give up their strength. The air valves collapse, admitting a rush of seawater. The whale's lungs flood. He suffocates and dies, revolving slowly in the water, leaving her white stomach exposed. A hollow lance attached to an airline is fired at her upturned belly, feeding compressed air into her corpse to inflate it and keep it afloat. An identifying flag with a radar reflector and the catcher boat's number is lobbed into her. She is left adrift, rimmed with oil slick and blood. With no enemies in the sea, the The whale is loath to believe in the attack, as were the Indians, as were the Aborigines. The factory ship, large as an aircraft carrier, with the capacity to deal with a whale every 30 minutes, draws alongside. A hole is bored into the nearest end of her body, lips or tail. A tow line is attached, and she is hauled to the bottom of the ramp. A set of moving claws is lowered towards her. The hawser wire is pulled. The curved fingers of the metal tongs bite. The whale is inched up the slope onto the flensing deck. Wearing spiked plates on their boots to pin themselves to the body, the flensing crew, armed with long-handled knives, slice into the whale, scoring huge straps, 18 inches wide and 10 feet long. Wires are looped around the ends of the loose flesh, and winches tear it from the whale's side. The whale is stuffed through manholes, to be carved into a sodden mess by whirring knives that lie below in rotating drums. The minced flesh is shunted into digestive tanks and boiled down for 4 hours by superheated steam. The solid residue is dried and bagged up. The oil is piped into the separator house, double boiled, centrifuged, hardened into edible fats, graded into half a dozen categories, barreled and stored. On deck, the skull, jawbones, ribs, spine, and pelvis are dismembered with chainsaws, then ground down and shoveled into the bone cookers, melted and milled into chicken feed and fertilizers. From a whale who was pregnant, the unborn are dragged into the meat boilers with huge hooks slung into their blowholes. The inner organs are towed into other boilers to be distilled into pharmaceuticals. The skin is collected from the slipways for glycerin. The belly blubber is reserved for a delicacy known as whale bacon. The jaw cartilage is pickled. The tail flukes are frozen to be eaten raw. The floating factory has done little but exchange 20,000 gallons of petroleum for 20,000 gallons of animal oil. Foreign currency has been acquired, yet civilization was built on the back of the whale. Coastal settlements followed the presence of whales. Shore stations near the whaling grounds became cities. Boston, New York, Plymouth, Tokyo, Leningrad, Vladivostok, Lisbon, Bergen, Brest, Odessa, Yokohama, San Francisco, Reykjavik, Valdivia, San Pedro, Vancouver, Sydney, Durban, Rotterdam, Whitby, Hull, Darwin, Buenos Aires, Hobart, Wellington, Auckland, Helsinki, Seoul, Murmansk, Manila, Valparaiso, Glasgow, Dundee, Philadelphia, Liverpool, London, Hamburg. Urban conglomerations plugged into the corpse of the whale, growing larger and larger by its light. The whale's insulating wetsuits hacked off in flensing ships in untold billions. For fuel, the lamps and candle wax, to turn night into day. The whale oil appliances for sweatshops and factories. For domestic lighting. For street lighting. For shop lighting. For flexible baleen filaments for watch springs, umbrellas, toys and upholstery. Even the springs in the first typewriter. Millions and millions and millions died in a marine holocaust, generating the implacable human appetite for electricity, petroleum, and plastic. For soap to be returned, mixed with dirt, into the sea. For margarine. For glycerol for lipstick and the idle fantasy world of beauticians. For detergents, from whose froth modern advertising was spawned. For glycerin, for nitroglycerin. To blow a hole in a human herd. For brushes and brooms. For linoleum. For medical trusses. For oilcloth. For sausage skins. For drum skins. For sword hilts and scabbards. For laces. For surgical stitches. For tennis racket strings. For riding crops. For chessmen. For buttons. For tanning leather. For artists' pigments. For wax crayons. For engineering coolants. For golf bags. For varnishes. For parchment. For printing inks. For insecticide. For calcium for Blanco and military purification. For calcium for fertilizer. To speed up the gestation of the earth. For the jute industry, for the wool industry, for the shoe industry, for the cotton industry, for tempering steel. Without the bloodletting of the whale, prime source of light and lubrication, the Industrial Revolution would have been scantily equipped. A spectral colossus haunts the inflated myth of progress, so keen to brush aside its hidden costs in the cause of pure profit. So forgetful in the bright name of novelty. For paint, for skin cream, for stock cubes, for cattle fencing, for mahjong counters, for iodine, for endocrinal hormones for those stiffened by arthritis, for liver oil and vitamins to treat those who are flagging, for insulin from the pancreas to treat those whose blood is too sweet, for gelatine for the coating of photographic film, with which we see ourselves as we see ourselves incessantly. For gelatin for the transparent capsules of pills, for gelatin for jelly, for gelatin for glue, for stays and gussets and busks and bodices and statuesque corsetry emphasizing the breasts and hips, the aesthetic apparatus, the sensual sustenance of empire building. For fish bait, for cattle meal, for the food supplies to fur farms, for dog food, for cat food, for the fermentation process in the manufacture of antibiotics, for oiling the automatic transmission systems of automobiles, for antifreeze, for low-calorie cooking fat, for shortening for bread and pastry and cakes, for hair treatments, for bath essence, for steaks, sashimi slices and marinated yamotami, for kujiranabe and obayuki soup, for whale meat rissoles, for whale meat stew, for pipes, for piano keys, for earrings, for brooches, for cufflinks, for cigarette holders, for shoe horns, for car wax, for shoe polish, for plasticizer, for fishing rods, for machine oil. For ambergris, burned in religious ceremonies, to put you in good odor with the Almighty. For cosmetics, to put you in good odor with each other. Sullen killing continues, the killing of the largest creatures in the world. It is unthinkingly supposed that the rest of life will not be shriveled in the process. Large creatures disappear, life becomes smaller. Blind dwarves crawl on top of the corpses of slaughtered giants to see further into their impending solitude. Gentle, visionary giants, most fully appreciated when dead, and reassuringly unreal. First, the Greenland whales, eliminated. Then, the right whales, so-called because they were judged to be the right whales to kill. Then the humpbacks. Then the great sperm whales. Then the blue. Then Bruder's whales. Then the Tasman. Then the grey whales. Then the fin. Then the piked whales. Then the sigh. Then the minkies. Then the pilots. All reduced to a precious few. And now the dolphin. The spinners. The black chins. The helmets. The snub fins. The duskies. The bottlenosed. The bridled. The spotted, the melon heads, the risso, the peels, the heavy sides, the hectors, the white beaks, the piebald, the Irrawaddy, the Amazon, the hourglass. 250,000 a year, netted and killed. History relates that whales have only eaten one human, Jonah, a prophet. Ingested briefly, in the fond hope, perhaps, of learning something of the human's forward planner, and then disgorged. The god Apollo saw the smallest whale, the dolphin, as the embodiment of peaceful virtue, undisguised joy, and as a guide to another world. He sometimes exchanged his godlike status to assume dolphin form and founded the oracle at Delphi, named in the dolphin's honor. There, the god hoped, man might be guided by a sense of otherworldliness. 2,500 years later, desacralized man strives to assimilate the dolphin in less mysterious ways, by lifting its hydrodynamic shape to sophisticate the design of submarine weapons, by confining it in small boxes filled with stale water as a scientific pet, or as a short-lived tourist attraction, bribed with dead fish to convey a repetitive sense of fun, or by killing it and tinning it and eating it. When dolphins speak, they use only vowels, just faint hints of consonants, but recognizable.
N-O-L-O-U-1-2-3-4-5-6-7-8-0-A-E-I-O-E. My name is Alpha. My name is Peter. My name is Bobo Cloud. It is 6 o'clock. Drink good water. Drink more water. Hey!
The bleak pleas of captives. Thinking that if this anxious imitation of their captor's speech finds favor, their experimental tanks may be changed for the open sea. Tanks in which every sound they make underwater remorselessly bounces back at them from concrete walls, entwining their minds in an acoustic cat's cradle. Tanks in which they are blinded in the name of science. But the more words they are coaxed into saying, the cleverer they are thought to be. The more successfully they communicate, the longer they are required to stay. Look, they're just like us. Listen. And they find themselves flattered to death. Good boy. Good boy. Say good boy.
Ah, oi.
In ancient Greece, it was thought that nothing diviner than the dolphin had ever been created. It was thought that they were once men who had lived in cities along with mortals, that they had exchanged the land for the sea, taking the form of fishes, but that they had retained the righteous spirit of man, retained human thought, and could perform human deeds. Because of this, the killing of a dolphin carried the penalty of death, a punishment which may yet be on the books. Cetacean oil, cunningly used to protect the whale's sound library from the cold, is extracted by hard-nosed, gimlet-eyed parasites who view the whale only as an industrial resource and eat through their musical society like deaf maggots, land-loving whale lice, unable to detect the presence of oil in the body of a fellow creature without desiring to suck it out. Cetacean oil, oil that does not corrode, does not film over, does not react to temperature changes, oil that can withstand the extreme cold of outer space without losing its viscosity, irreplaceable sperm oil, is stolen to provide the highest grade of lubricant, stockpiled and prized beyond all others by the manufacturers of arms to anoint the moving parts of missiles. Though this particular motor lubricant may lead to all human cities clogged with rubble, ending their existence like beached whales, washed up and rotting on the foreshores of civilization, whose foundations were built upon dead blubber. When Orion boasted that he would kill all the animals in the world, the earth sent a monstrous scorpion to sting him. In classical times, the rare stranding of a single whale was taken as an omen of the death of a loved one. In modern times, the mass stranding of whales, prompted by the disorienting noise of tankers, liners, depth charges, warships, and the corruption of the oceans with waste, with radiation, is taken to indicate the inferior intelligence of whales, and ignored. In accordance with some private harmony, whales appear out of the blue, to allow men to ride upon their backs, to save them from sharks, to rescue drowning men, even massaging their hearts. Sometimes, a dolphin, with a mixture of saintliness and mischief, will try to bring round a body in the water by employing the final act of intimacy. When whaling boats have been overturned, and men have found themselves floundering helplessly in the seas, they have been pushed up to the surface like bunches of frogs, forgivingly nudged by fellow mammals until they regain their breath, tolerantly supported on a whale's back until they revived, to kill again. In the Kojanji Temple in Yamaguchi Province, tombs have been built to dead whales. The monuments are facing the sea. Thus, it is thought, the whales may pay homage to their dead. The inscription upon one reads, "You whales who have perished, although you cannot return to the world, we will cherish your memory long in our hearts." In Arakawara, there is a memorial to 600 whales. In the Chudoji Temple of Moroto, there is a shrine for 1,000. Beside the graves of embryo whales, each year in Yamaguchi, a ceremony is conducted in memory of the souls of the unborn, and to lift a curse on man for killing so many whales. And water. Whales have become the dominant species, without killing their own kind. In the water, whales have become the dominant species, though they allow the resources they use to renew themselves. In the water, whales have become the dominant species, though they use language to communicate rather than to eliminate rivals. In the water, whales have become the dominant species, though they do not brutally guard their patch with bristling security. In the water, whales have become the dominant species without trading innocence or the pretension of possessions. In the water, whales have become the dominant species, though they acknowledge minds other than their own. In the water, whales have become the dominant species without allowing their population to reach plague proportions. In the water, the whale is the dominant species, an extraterrestrial who has already landed, a marine intelligentsia with the knowledge of the deep. From space, the planet is blue. From space, the planet is the territory, not of humans, but of the whale.
This is Catherine Hastings, and you've been listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. You've been listening to Whale Nation, performed by the late poet, dramatist, and more, Hethcote Williams. I hope you'll look him up. You can find him on Wikipedia. It's Hethcote Williams. If you have any comments or questions about tonight's program, please contact me at khastings@wordtemple.com. I'd love to hear from you. And as always, thanks for listening.